and welcome to the Moonshine Jesus Show. Today we are talking about Fallout and should have a lot of fun. We are brought to you, as always, by progressivechristianity.org. I hope that you will check them out wherever you subscribe to social media, and that you'll go to that website if you need progressive Christian resources, and also hope that you will follow Moonshine Jesus Show on Facebook. We do need to let you know right away that we will have spoilers. Fallout's relatively new, and so if you haven't watched it, we might spoil it for you. I'm joined, as always, by my good buddy Mark Samlin. How you doing today, Mark?
I'm doing great. As you heard, I was hoping to get to say this before it happened. I have a new dog, new to our house. Rescue, who is here with me, needs to be in this room we've got another dog and they're getting along fine, but we don't want to take chances. So apologies for the unusual sound. I just know those watching live, you might see her moving around. Her name's Maggie. You can say hey to her if you need to. Hopefully she's not going to bark or anything. She's been pretty good about that. So, but I just wanted to give that caveat up front.
I'm glad your dog is with us. This is an animal-friendly podcast, and you know, it's good to have her supporting us.
I am a little worried though. She hasn't seen Fallout yet, so it's going to get spoiled a bit for her.
There's nothing we can do. Hey, Mark, do you have a drink to get you started today?
I do, and it ended up not being nearly as cool as it was supposed to be. So, as everybody said, there's going to be spoilers. So we end our last episode with one of the characters looking out across what I now know is New Vegas. And I know in New Vegas there is a drink called an atomic cocktail. And it's served in a rocket. It's, for some reason, it's green, although it's made with orange soda. But then they put pills in it. And so you're supposed to like buy diet orange soda with vodka and then put Mentos in. And as you can see, I got the Mentos and I have I don't have a rocket ship, but I have a glass that's not far shaped from
the rocket. I like that. Yeah.
But the problem was I bought plain, not diet. And you can plop all the Mentos into it you want. It won't do the fizzy thing.
It's not doing the thing. Yeah.
In the show, they put pills in it that sound almost like Mentos or Mentos or something like that.
Yeah, right.
But anyway, so that's what I have. I do have my closest version of the atomic cocktail. What'd you go with?
That still looks pretty cool. I like it. So one of the standout characters for me was the ghoul and Walton Goggins. I think I'm a fan. I think he is just a fantastic actor. And, you know, he ended up being the one through whom we saw kind of the before times. And I thought that was interesting. Yeah. And so through some research, I discovered that Walton Goggins owns his own distillery. It's it's called Mulholland Distilling. And he is a big whiskey fan. And so I got some Mulholland Distilling whiskey here. And so going to drink some Walton Goggins whiskey as we talk about this.
That is impressive. It's impressive. But the one thing you don't get that I get that is imported in the game, what's that? I got caps.
Oh, you got caps. Oh, you know what? That's so important. I'll have to go back and there's no cap on that. Okay. I'll have to find some somewhere else. Okay. Hey, let's take a swig of this. Let's come back and talk about Fallout.
Moonshine Jesus. Moonshine Jesus. Moonshine Jesus. Moonshine Jesus.
Hello, and thank you for joining us for our Geek Out segment. We're going to take a little bit of time, let our geek flags fly. Man, I stumbled all over that one. But we are going to let them fly. We're going to have a little fun geeking out about Fallout. And then we're going to try to keep that, you know, as tight and compact as possible, because we do want to move on and spend a little more time talking about the theology, the politics that come mm-hmm. up in the show, and some thoughts about that. So the official, for those of you who maybe haven't somehow been sucked up in the massive thing that is Fallout now, the official description of Fallout is this. It is first of all, it's a Prime Video series of 8 shows for the first season. And this is their official description. Based on one of the greatest video games of all time, Fallout is the story of the haves and have-nots in a post-apocalyptic world in which there's almost nothing left to have. Mm-hmm. 200 years after the apocalypse, the gentle denizens of luxury Fallout shelters are forced to return to the aerated hellscape their ancestors left behind. And are shocked to discover an incredibly complex, gleefully weird, and highly violent mm-hmm. universe waiting for them. What do you think of that description?
I love that description.
there's some fun things in there. But you know what I noticed reading through their official description?
What?
It tells you nothing about the story.
Well, part of the fun of Fallout is discovering the story. I mean, especially
it's not a big story. It's not a particularly complex story, but it's fun.
That's right. It's not real complex, but it's fun. And I, as we both talked about, neither one of us really played the video game. And so I don't know if it follows the story of the video game or not. Do you know that?
I do know from folks who, I was getting my hair cut today, and at the barbershop, a new guy comes in. Here, the barber asked me what we're going to be talking about on the show today, and I mentioned Fallout. Turns out he's a big Fallout gamer, and he had just binge watched the show. Uh-huh. And yes, this does not follow any storyline at all. There's lots and lots of parts that are stolen from the storylines, like little pieces that are almost like tips of the hat of acknowledging different storylines, but this is all on its own. Most of these characters are new characters that don't appear anywhere in any of the games. Neither one of us played the games. After having watched it, any interest in playing the game?
It was a fun story. It really kind of mm-hmm. sucked you in. This was one of the ones, you know, you and I both talked about how we kind of love to get sucked in to shows. And this one was one that really sucked me in, that like, I couldn't wait to see what the next episode was going to be. And so I thought I haven't been a big gamer in recent years, but I used to be. And so I thought, man, I really missed out by not playing Fallout. If it's half as fun as the show is to watch, to play the video games, then I really missed out. So, yeah, I did kind of start checking to see, are there, can I play it on my phone?
What platforms is it on?
Yeah, what platforms is it on? Is it on any of the platforms, the retro gaming platforms I have around my house?
I've already started looking into buying some of those old retro platforms, because I always give them away or whatever. I'm very interested in it too. I also think, based on something you said, we should say right now, if you haven't watched Fallout and you're thinking about doing it, it really does suck you in. Don't start watching this like at 11 o'clock at night, because you're going to want to see the next one. You're probably going to watch the next episode. And it'll be a bad position to be in. So since neither of us had any previous experience with Fallout, what were, if any, your expectations going into this? What were you kind of thinking was you're going to experience?
You know, I guess I was kind of thinking that it was going to be a Resident Evil type game or type show. And that's kind of the notion I had in my mind of what the Fallout series was that it was similar to Resident Evil. And so I did play some of those, and I did watch the movies that went along with those, at least some of them. So I thought it was kind of like that. But that's not really quite what this was. Right. It wasn't like zombies who were living on the earth. No, it was a collection of wonderfully weird people who had survived in different ways and had developed different cultures and different ways of organizing. And so it wasn't really what I thought, actually. It was and it was a lot more fun than I thought it was.
I was going to ask you, how did it end up comparing, for sure? Yeah. So it was more fun than you.
Yeah, I thought it was going to be really serious, you know?
I came in exactly the same. I was expecting very, like, maybe not quite as dark post-apocalyptic that some things are, but I was expecting zombies. I was expecting it to be kind of like a little dark and it really, it's the opposite of that. Somehow,
right?
This is a upbeat, positive post-apocalyptic.
Yeah.
Kind of fun. It's amazing that they were able to do that. So
it really is.
Yeah, it's amazing. There's so much to love about this. It really, even the soundtrack is just astonishing. Just the extra sounds that they put in, the sound scape that they create is amazing. I mean, it's just, there's so many things to love about it. But what was your favorite thing about season one? And it doesn't have to be about the movie making. It can be a character. It can be about whatever. But what was your favorite just thing about season one?
Well, I love that we really did get to kind of see the world through different eyes of different characters, which I suppose kind of feels like selecting different characters that you might play. And and that was kind of fun to like see their experience and how that shaped them. And so I really enjoyed that. But I think I especially enjoyed kind of going out of the bunker with Lucy and seeing what the world was like. And so I kind of liked going through that character's eyes and going out from the bunker into the world. I thought that was a lot of fun as she went on this voyage. I also enjoyed the flashbacks. I thought that was a lot of fun.
That was well done, wasn't it? And they always waited to just the right timing. Like when we were already beginning going, well, wait a minute, where did?
Yeah.
And then they just bring it in at just the right time.
Yeah, I thought that was a lot of fun, and I thought kind of this world that they created that's kind of like an advanced 1950s kind of retro futuristic kind of time was really interesting. Mm-hmm. And even though we were like looking back in time, there was world building there in flashbacks, and I thought that was really cool. I really appreciated that, and it really brought me into the story more fully. How about you? What stood out to you?
There are just so many things, but the thing that I actually I put a little thought into, what I love the most about it is the way that they just, I'm calling it the straight-faced absurdity of the whole thing. Like, it's so absurd. Yeah. It's all, and everything is, from the way they do things, from the fact that bottle caps are money. Like, it's just, it's also absurd, but it's also done so straight faced. Like when Maximus gets into the big iron suit for the first time, and he wants to help somebody. And so he stops this man from being beaten to death, and he feels good about it, you know? And then it turns out that the man that he saved was being beaten because he was attempting to copulate with the other man's chicken.
So
absolutely absurd, but it's told with such a straight face. And so, like, they're serious about that being an important part of the storytelling. It's not like, this is ridiculous. And that happens over and over again. And it's one of the most, I found joy every time anything like that popped up on. And I think that's one of the things that's so great about this. It is almost a joyful telling of an apocalyptic tale.
Yeah. And I think maybe that's one of the key successes in like adapting a video game or some kind of an animated show or anything like that. Yeah. That's kind of absurd by its very nature to lean into that. I think it really makes for a successful adaptation. If you can kind of poke fun at the genre while you're doing it and kind of tongue in cheek, it helps you to appreciate it a little more, I think.
That actually leads really well into one of the questions I had for you. So, this is the second recent video game that has been basically a smash hit show. We had Last of Us. We talked about that. We loved it.
Right.
What do you think it is about video games that seems to make them at this point such good source material for television shows? I mean, we even had movies like Mario Brothers,
right,
based on all the Mario games. It's a smash hit as well. What do you think it is about them that make them a good source material?
I think that it's they're really immersive, and especially since we get like role player games and things, just, you know, and I think particularly in the last maybe 20, 25 years, when we've seen kind of developments in kind of the realism of these games, that people really get lost in the worlds. And because they can do such significant world building, a lot of people have really strong attachments to those. And I mean, spend a lot of time living in those worlds. And people who maybe even aren't big gamers, but maybe get obsessed with one particular game and get really into that, that you can feel a real emotional attachment to that. And you can have spent a lot of your life doing that. And I think one of the things that people often don't understand about gaming is that it's also communal in a lot of ways, whether you're like sitting in a room with people playing a game, or if you're online and you're talking to people who you may never meet, that's a communal thing. And so, like, I think it really that is. It also draws on that people have spent a lot of time building community in these online spaces or in these digital spaces, and they spend a lot of time immersed in the world. And so I think getting to revisit those in a different way is pretty cool, and is one of the reasons why maybe it's successful. That's my take.
Yeah,
on it.
No, I agree. I agree with a whole lot of that. I think that's exactly right. And also, I just think video games have become a thing where they make a lot of money, and so they're able to bring in people that they maybe early on in gaming weren't bringing in. They're bringing in master storytellers to come and tell these stories. So it's not surprising that it can lift and go to another format and really be a great story. It's also, I think, one of the most amazing things is that helps it become good source material, is that those people they bring in, those writers and creators of the landscape, they have to make such a more vastly involved and intricate and interrelated a world than you do if you're just writing a television show, because everyone's there, they're walking through it, they're going, you know, most of these are open world kind of games where you can go anywhere you want, anytime you want. It's very complex, and there's so much that has to be built around it. I think it just naturally lends itself to it, and I hope we see a lot more of it going forward. Listen, we could geek out more and more and more about this, because I can't tell you how good the show is. It's just
so good.
It is fantastic. It's some of the better television that we've had in a while, and we can't encourage you enough to see it. But we are going to go ahead and wrap this segment up and come back on the other side and do a little talk of Theo Politico and see where it takes us.
Welcome back to the Moonshine Jesus Show, where today we're talking about Fallout, and we are moving into our Theo Politico segment. So one of the things I really liked about this, Mark, was not just that it was fun to watch. It was visually kind of stunning to watch. We got some great stories. It was fun, but it also dealt with some pretty significant things. And so one of the things that we discover over the course of this season is that Vault-Tec, makers of vaults and other equipment having to do with the end of the world, was probably largely responsible for the destruction of the Earth. And so one of the quotes that we find is, America outsourced its survival to the private sector, and they decided to keep Vault-Tec alive instead. So basically, the corporation eliminating the competition to ensure that they had the maximum profits, and that was going to be the case even if it meant a ton of people dying and the end of the world as we knew it. So, Mark, do you see any parallels to that with American life? None, right? Luckily, none. Corporations are all very ethical.
Ethical corporations. Yep. We have enough laws that make sure that they're not able to overstep their being their yeah. means.
Oh, thank God!
Or have an undue influence in the our political system. It's great. Mm-hmm. It's so good. We have the best of the best, and it's just amazing how well it works. No, I mean obviously we are there's so much in fallout that seems to be taking what's going on currently and then mirroring it in this absurd but not completely out of hand idea of what it could end up being. Mm-hmm. And right now, right. we definitely live in a corporatocracy. I'm blanking on the word. What's the word?
Corporatocracy? I don't know. I like
there's
it.
A word. There's a word like there, it. And all of a sudden, I don't have. But we definitely have a system that of a government where corporations have far too much influence and really end up getting most of what they want most of the time because of the way that they hand out money, essentially. And we see it in this. And like you said, yes, it's a little bit ridiculous to think that there was this corporation that had so much power that they decided, we're just going to blow everything up because that'll give more value to our vaults and more value to our company. And we'll just rebuild after it's all over with. In a lot of ways that we do that already, where we have corporations mm-hmm. who are like, you know what, if we can get these laws to be weakened, then we can do whatever we want to make money. And it doesn't matter how many lives get lost for, whether it's about water, whether it's about war, it doesn't matter. As long as we can make money. It is frightening, isn't it? It is frightening that
it's terrifying.
This human made source of measurement, money,
yeah, mm-hmm.
is more important than anything that's real in the world. It's crazy that we have arrived at that point.
But yet here we are. And as we've talked about before, I mean, it's kind of outlandish to think about corporations destroying the earth and say a nuclear strike or something, but not unfathomable and not too different from corporations, say, producing so much carbon that they literally are destroying the earth. I mean, we know that that's one of the biggest causes. Yeah. And certainly the ways that we treat corporations as if they're individuals in the United States and yet don't tax them to pay their fair share. I mean, they're literally killing people through profits. And so, I really thought that was an interesting take to help us see what really is true in kind of an outlandish way, which I thought was very clever. So one of the other things we see is we kind of go back to the 1950s or
that timeline,
retro futuristic 1950s, is that we get this whole thing about communism. And so we hear, I'm not a communist, Mr. Howard. This is what the woman who becomes Moldiver, Williams, mm-hmm. says. She says, I'm not a communist, Mr. Howard. That's just a dirty word they use to describe people who aren't insane. What do you think about that, Mark, in comparison to how we don't hear maybe necessarily people accused of being communists anymore, but I hear it a lot with socialism or other scare words.
You're woke, you're liberal, and it is meant to, and it is used for the exact same purpose. It's used of you're not like us, and I want to marginalize you, and I want to make you less significant. It's 100% the same thing. It doesn't matter what the word that's being used. It's that you're not falling in line, and that's frightening, and I don't like it. So I'm going to do a public campaign to make this word a bad word, and then label mm-hmm. what I don't like with it. And it doesn't have to be true, because if I can just say enough about you, it'll stick enough with enough people that it's going to be effective for me. And it's yet again one of the horrible things we've allowed to happen in the society, but it's been going on for so long. You would think that we would have figured out a better way of confronting it and educating it out of people, but we really haven't, have we?
We really haven't. And I think that's a good point, that it doesn't even matter what the word is. It doesn't even matter if it's true. All And you don't have to back it up with anything other than just to say it. And I think that that's the point, right? To get to a point where you can just level a threat against somebody or an accusation against somebody without having to have any evidence and trying to make that person untrustworthy. And so I think that's a great example of, say, being woke or being a socialist or whatever. And it's often used, it seems, for people who are trying to advocate for those who are the most in need, right? You're just a socialist. I don't know. It feels like just trying to follow Jesus. I don't know.
It's exactly all I was doing was following the teachings. So yeah, you can call it what you want. But it is interesting that it's always kind of around that, around people who are trying to help other ones, folks. And instead of making some argument of why what you're doing is wrong. I don't know how you would make a good argument about that. So maybe that's the cause why they don't even try. They just try to label you a bad thing, which was supposed to mean everything you do is equally bad. And it's just, it is such a massive fail in any kind of logic.
Yeah.
For me, the fact that we don't teach our students better to watch for those kinds of logical fallacies and fails.
Yeah.
Is kind of on us. We need to be doing a better job about teaching how important logic is and to analyze things. Instead of asking students to memorize things, let's teach them to think.
That's a great point, Mark. And I mean, I think in fact we also tend to, especially I think I see this in churches or even in homes where people actually encourage kids to leverage these kinds of arguments rather than having a curiosity or anything to actually try to dismiss people by doing this very thing. And I think a lot of times people learn that really early from parents who aren't engaging with anything or trying to teach
mirroring and modeling their parents, for sure. And I'm not saying that there aren't schools that don't do a great job. There certainly are. But even the way we set our school systems up, where testing is so important, where memorization and spinning back is so important, we force some of the best teachers in the world who could really, truly teach our kids how to think for themselves, how to analyze things, how to derive outcomes. We handcuff them with a lot of the standards that we are putting on them. And we've got to make it a better environment for our teachers out there, because there's so many that are amazing and so giving and give more than most of us give at our jobs, honestly, just because of what's required of them. We need to do a better job at setting them up to have a better chance of impacting kids the way they want.
That's a great point, Mark. You know, one of the things that I really liked about this season, as I mentioned, was getting to see the way that different societies in a similar geographical area kind of developed based on what life experience they had, based on what resources they had. And one of the interesting ones was the vault, where we see kind of the people who are privileged, although we also learn later that maybe they were experimented on, and maybe even with privilege came from some experimentation. But we see in at least Lucy's vault a meritocracy develop, we get the golden rule as the paramount value. And we also see that that's enforced by people who don't really believe in that kind of thing, right? We find that it's Vault Tech who's actually running these vaults, and people who maybe don't believe in that golden rule. And so here's my question, Mark. Does the creation of this class of people who are taught to value others and stuff, is that going to undo Vault Tech? Like, even though Vault Tech doesn't have the best of intentions in doing that, by teaching people to ultimately care about others, do unto others as they would have done unto them, does that undo the evilness of Vault Tech? What do you think?
I think it certainly has the potential to undo it. It also has the potential, because it's such an isolated development of that. It's a very small group of people, and it's hard to know exactly how they idealize do unto others. that it's possible it could run the other way and it would create mm-hmm. you being more of a doormat in which Vault-Tec's just going to use it to their advantage and step on it. But I think it also could lead to their downfall. A group of folks who aren't going to buy into their way of being and behaving and are going to be deeply disturbed when they figure out, wait a minute, you're not yeah. doing this and you're supposed to be mm-hmm. doing this. I could see it taking them down. I don't know. Which way do you kind of lean on this?
Well, I think we kind of saw it whenever Lucy realized that her dad had been lying to mm-hmm. her whole life and to everyone else. And she decided ultimately to do what was right and to turn against her dad yeah. because of the Definitely. Values that he taught. And I'll tell you, mm-hmm. as I saw that, the first thing I thought about was people who grow up maybe in conservative churches or something like that, where they are told to love their neighbor every single week, right?
Yep,
and then yep. they see other people who have told them that not loving yeah. their neighbor, and it drives them away from the church because they want Absolutely. To follow Jesus. And I have mm-hmm. heard so many people who have come into my church and said, hey, look, I left religion because people told me to love others, and then they yeah. practice not doing it every week, even though we read from the words of Jesus, which called us exactly. to this radical yeah. message of love.
Yeah, this past week
that was your experience.
Yeah, this past week we had two people join the church. Part of the process that I do is have them. I go out with them and have them just tell me their spiritual journey, no yeah. prompting, just tell it to me. And
right.
both had mm-hmm. almost the exact same experience of I was at these churches that were saying this, and then I was watching how they were treating people, and I knew uh-huh. that there was something very wrong about it, and I left. I didn't want anything to do with it, and it took me a long time to ever work back to finding any kind of a spiritual community that I wanted to be a part of. So yeah, I definitely see it too. It's not surprising that we're hearing that from so many people because of the number yeah. of churches that actually operate that way.
Let me ask you one more question, Mark, that I want to squeeze in here. So Maximus says at one point, everyone wants to save the world. They just disagree on how. I'm not convinced that everyone really wants to save the world there, but that also used to be the narrative in the United States, right? Between political parties. We all yeah. want to do what's best for everyone. We just disagree about how we can accomplish that. And so yeah. maybe Democrats want to use social programs and maybe Republicans want to use the private sector or nonprofits to do that. That's the narrative that we used to hear. Right.
Yeah.
Do you agree with that narrative?
Keyword used to.
Yeah. So that's this. So I've got a 2-part question here. Yeah. I really want your perspective on one. Was that ever true? And two, is it true today? Do we really all want what's all right. best for the world? Fair what's enough. Best for Fair America? Enough.
Yeah. I think there was a time at which it was more true, but not really completely true. And I think we can go back and look at American history and see that clearly. But today it's just strayed so far from that. Even Democrats who I do think have they're more invested in trying to make the world better for more people still, as we talked about at the beginning of the show, still yeah. buy into corporatocracy and, mm-hmm. allow those businesses to run part of the, which is not looking out for the best interest of all people. So we have that even in the folks that we might want to celebrate mm-hmm. as heroes and in comparison yep. are, they definitely are. On the other side, you have folks who very clearly have given up on that idea, who very yeah. clearly want to make sure the world's a better place for their people. And mm-hmm. they really don't care about what it does to all the other people. Matter of fact, they prefer for the other people to be a servant class, not even a working class, a servant class, and just be stuck there to play to allow their lives to be as good as possible. At least that's what I think. I'm sure that you think that I'm crazy and that's not true.
Oh, of course. No, I think they're look, I think even say 15 years ago, we could have had a conversation about the common good. I think sure. we could have said what is best for the common good. And mm-hmm. I think everyone, at least in their political talking points, would yeah. have said, yeah, we want to do what's best for the common good. And I think you're right. Now we don't even have people pretending anymore. that that we're at the point where people have kind of said, no, it's about us.
If anything, they're leveraging not doing that. They're leveraging, I'm going to make the world better for you. They really have gone to the other extreme.
That's right. Yeah. For you and for me and everyone and the people else, like us. Screw you. And sorry. Yeah. Or maybe not sorry. We actually probably don't want you here. And we really only want people like us. Hey, I would really like to explore that a lot more, but we don't have time because we've got to move into our favorite segment, Make Me Look Stupid. So let's grab a drink and then let's come back and try and make each other look stupid.
We are moving into our Make Me Look Stupid segment. I have the thrill of getting to go first, which will allow me to not have you steal any of my questions. You did a near steal of one of my questions where you said something that was really almost an answer to my question. So I'm going to skip that. I'm not going to go there.
Okay.
I'm going to go with a pretty straightforward one. So as I said, talking about my drink, we now know... Yeah. That Hank is all suited up going to New Vegas. That's where my drink came from, at least where it was inspired by.
Yeah.
Why do you think Hank is going to New Vegas? What is he going there for? What's his purpose?
You know, I think that is going to be where the vault, the true vault is. So like there's the vault for the most important vault tech people. And so we find out, you know, that that there is a vault for the most important vault tech leaders and the ghoul. He wants to know where his family is, and I think that that's the vault that they're in. I think that's the main vault. And so because we've had this cold fusion generator created, I think he's going there to go up the corporate ladder and find out what to do next. That's why I think's happening. What do you think?
I think you nailed it. I think that's exactly it. I think that's where the whole vault tech, I think they're stationed there. I even think there's a chance that his ex-wife's Barb is going to be there, that she might have been cryo-frozen like he was and then brought out. I think there's at least a chance that we're going to see Barb there as well. I think it's going to be fascinating. I want to squeeze another question in, just like you did.
Okay.
What do you think's next for Lucy and the ghoul? Like, what do you think next season's going to look like between the two of them?
Oh, I think they're following Hank trying to get to Vault Tech. I think that the whole thing is going to be unearthing what happened to the ghoul's wife and family and what caused the actual fallout. I think we're going to get that story, and I think we're going to see them going to New Vegas following Hank.
I agree. I think we're going to see that, but I also think that we're going to see them reluctantly come together as a duo. I think we're going to have a buddy cop show. I think next season's a buddy cop show with Lucy and the ghoul following Hank and trying to figure out what's actually going on in New Vegas. And once they figure it out, there's probably going to be another level of kind of that buddy cop working together reluctantly, you know, the two that don't really fit together but have to work together. I think that's where we're going. And I hope that's where we're going because, come on. The ghoul and Lucy as partners, like straight-laced Lucy who grew up, you know, doing to others. And the ghoul who's kind of just thrown it all, seemed to be a guy with a big heart, thrown it all away and is just about survival. And he doesn't have a nose and his skin's, I think it could be a fantastic. I'm hoping that's where they go. They're already working on it. So we'll find out maybe within a year. I don't know. We'll see. All right, sir.
You know what's fun about the ghoul too? It seems like we find out he's an actor, right? And his voice, whenever he's just normal guy, is not the same. It seems like he's kind of embraced his Western persona as his as his being. And so that's kind of fun. Okay, here's my question, and it's about Moldiver and others like maybe the ghoul's wife and all. So we know that we know that it's been like 200 years that since the bombs. And we know that the ghoul is still able to be around because he's become this ghoul. And as long as he takes this medicine, he can stay alive. But also that ghouls seem to have some kind of a resistance to any kind of sickness
or
even things like, bullets and stuff like that as well. So they kind of seem to be impervious to that. How about, Moldiver? The inventor of the cold fusion. Mm-hmm. How is she still around after all that?
I have to assume that we're all rolling into a time period, and maybe we're going to find this out in season two. I think all of those folks who were of any importance didn't want to live underground. And they thought 250 years is probably enough time for things to clear out enough. So we'll get frozen. And then at this point, I think we're hitting the point where all of these folks are starting to be unfrozen, maybe through a program or whatever. And that's why they're still around. Because I'm not seeing any signs that it's anything about that they are also taking the medicine and that it's just
right.
Didn't become ghouls or whatever. I think that it's more likely that they were cryogenically frozen and that we're at a stage now where they're coming out of it. But that did bother me too. I was like, wait a minute, these timelines seem weird.
That was one of the things that I couldn't figure out, was it really 200 years or was it not, or how were they alive for so long? And so I like that. I like the possibility of cryogenic freezing, because we saw that's a technology that
they're doing, particularly with people who were important.
So I like that. I think that makes sense.
That's my best guess. I do think they have been very good at setting things up that make you curious and you're like, wait a minute. Explaining it.
Yeah.
You go, oh, okay. Yeah. So I feel like this one is just too big and they're too good at recognizing when things like that are going on and giving us the explanation that we need. I feel like we're going probably next season get the explanation of how these folks who were around 250 years ago are still around. I feel like they're going to have to explain that, and they know it.
I think you're right. I think that's one of the things that made it fun, right? Was you were curious about stuff, and it really pulled you in for the next episode. So I think that's one of the signs of a really good show is like when you've binged all the episodes and then you're like,
I'm going to go back and watch this again, man. I am 100% going back to watch this again. I think as things got revealed, it'll be fun to go back and realize they were showing you some of that. You just didn't know it yet because you didn't get the. Yeah. So I'm very excited to go back and start and rewatch some of these episodes and see what was already there that was missed.
I'm with you. Yeah, I think it's going to be fun. I almost started again last night before the show. I'm going to get sucked in. I can't.
If I'd have had just a little more time, I think between yesterday and maybe even an hour today, I might have tried to sneak a few in. Same thing. And I'm excited about thinking about going back and watching it, you know?
Yeah, I know. A good show. So if you haven't watched it, watch it. Fallout, can't recommend it high enough. Amazon Prime.
Absolutely. Listen, we've got to do something next week, and there is a big anniversary coming up. I don't know. Do you know about the anniversary of one of our favorite types of sci-fi?
Okay, so maybe Star Wars? Is Star Wars having an anniversary coming up?
There is a 25th year anniversary of Star Wars The Phantom Menace.
Phantom Menace. Yeah, I remember watching that in theater, standing outside the line.
I remember watching it, leaving the theater, going, "What have they done to Star Wars?" But this is the.
I recall that was a common question that people had after watching Phantom Menace.
And everyone for the next 3 years had their impersonation of Jar Jar Binks that they would pull out anytime that they wanted to annoy other people.
Do you have
Misa Jar Jar Binks? Yeah, I got a little bit of a Jar Jar. I got a little like Jar Jar.
Yeah. Next episode, you should do the whole episode.
The whole show. It's Jar Jar Binks.
Misa want to hear that.
So listen, let's do that. Let's do the 25th anniversary for those who are interested. Okay. It is going to be playing in the theaters. They're re-releasing it to the theaters. So it'll be a lot of fun. Go see it in the big screen. And then next week, we'll come back and talk about it. See if we were being fair, at least me. I know that I panned it very hard and really have been avoiding watching it again. So it'll be fun to revisit and see what we think. What do you think, man? You want to do it?
Okay, that sounds good. I'm in for it.
All right, that's the plan. So everyone, go catch it and make sure you come back next week and join us for next episode of the Moonshine Jesus Show. Moonshine Jesus.